We've been talking the last time about the development of the Eucharist and sacrificial worship and those kinds of things. I want to shift focus today and talk about a type of worship that's called fixed hour prayer and how that gets played out in a variety of different contexts. Fixed hour prayer is exactly what it sounds like. You pray at a fixed time, at a fixed hour. And it is something that basically every world religion has some variant of. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Even if you don't have a clock or are able to tell time, you know when the sun comes up. And that's a good time to pray. So you know when the sun comes up, you pray when the sun comes up. You can tell when the sun is pretty much halfway overhead. And that's a good time to pray. You can tell when the sun goes down. And that's a good time to pray. Almost every world religion has prayers that are said in the morning, prayers that are said at noon, and prayers that are said at sundown. All right? That is kind of the basic fixed hour prayer. And some of them are very casual of pray at sunrise, pray at sundown, pray at midday. Some of them are very formalized, that there are specific prayers that you say at sunrise, at noon, and at sundown. As time goes on, these things get more elaborate, and as we are able to tell time, more than just by the rising of the sun and its setting, right? They get more formalized. So where this reaches the height of formalization is in the medieval monastery, the medieval Christian monastery. All right? So they developed what was called the daily office, that is, daily prayers of the monks. And at the kind of height of the medieval monasticism, there are 9 daily offices, starting at about 2 o'clock in the morning with an office called Matins, because that's when, I don't know, some bird starts to sing. I haven't actually heard it myself, but apparently,
no, you're asleep.
but about 2 a.m. was the great night office of the church. Then there was the sunrise prayers, the morning prayers. Then there was prayers at about 10:30-ish. Then there were prayers at noon, of course. Then there were prayers at about 2 o'clock. There were prayers at sundown. There are prayers at about midnight that was called compline. So if you were a monk, you never actually got a full night's sleep because they woke you up at midnight to say night prayers, and they woke you up at 2 a.m. to say matins, and they woke you up at whatever time the sun came up to say.
And you didn't get much done during the day.
Because you saw. And that was the point, was that through your day, no matter what you were doing, you stopped and prayed. Okay? Well, obviously, this works really well if you live in a monastery, right? Doesn't work really well if you don't live in a monastery, unless you happen to be rich. And so one of the things that happens for people who can read, and the monks can read, they're all taught to read, but for wealthy people who can read, is that they have printed for them, usually by the monks, something that's called a book of hours. You might have heard of these if you've gone to college or, you know, studied medieval libraries. They're usually beautifully illuminated. You know, the first letters are painted and have gold leaf put on them. And
the Book of Cows.
There are pictures like the Book of Cows is a book of hours. And the idea is it does exactly what it says. It has the prayers for the hours. So that if you're a wealthy, particularly wealthy women, but if you're a wealthy person who is faithful, you have your Book of Hours and you have the prayers and the Psalms.
How many of these are in our...
I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. Okay?
Okay.
Hold on to that question. I'll get there. One of the things that is common among the monastic offices and the Book of Hours is reading the Book of Psalms basically in sequence. So that in about the course of a month or so, you would have read all 150 of the Psalms. So you read, you know, you would start Matins of the first day of the month with Psalm 1, and then you would read the Psalms in sequence. And so the result of this was that people didn't know a whole lot about the Bible. They knew a few of the stories that might be illustrated in stained glass or have been acted out, but a lot of them knew the Psalms because they were recited in a regular pattern. Now, we get to the Reformation, and particularly the English Reformation. And back up before we get to the Reformation. One of the things that happens in the course of time is that these fixed hour prayers that start out very simply of you're going to read whatever psalm is in sequence for the day, you might have a short reading, some prayers, and then that's the end of the service. Over time, things accrete to it. So we're going to have special readings for the saints' days, right? And we're going to have special readings maybe during Lent. And we're going to have special readings during special festivals, maybe Advent, maybe for the Easter season. And so even if you were attempting to read the Bible in some sort of sequence, it got broken up by all of these festivals and feast days. And by the beginning of the 1500s, you couldn't pray the monastic offices with one book, with a Book of Hours, like you could in the medieval times. You needed to have the Book of Hours plus the Book of Readings for the saints' days plus the... So you needed three or four books to be able to pray the hourly prayers. Remember, this is still a time... The printing press is still a little ways off. It's pretty expensive to have three or four books. Most people, if they own a book at all, own one, maybe two. But they don't have five. And they certainly don't have four that are devoted to, you know, praying in this way. So, come the Reformation, a couple of things have happened. The printing press has happened, and with it, a huge rise in what's called vernacular literacy. People can read in their own language. They may not be able to read in Latin, but they can read in their own language. And the printing press has reduced the price of books somewhat because you don't have to copy them all out by hand anymore. You can have them printed. So come the Reformation in England, and Thomas Cranmer looks at this series of offices and hours and stuff and says, well, that's great if you're a monk, but Henry VIII is in the process of disestablishing the monasteries and giving all the land away to the wealth, so we don't have the monks to pray anymore. And this isn't really... It was never Jesus' intention to have a specific class of people who said prayers on our behalf. He thought, you know, Jesus taught all his disciples to pray, so we should teach all his disciples to pray. So Cranmer, who is not a stupid man, says, you know, what's wrong with the beginning of the day and the end of the day? as times that people should pray. And so he takes those 9 medieval monastic offices and collapses them into 2. Morning prayer and evening prayer. And he is very explicit about this, that they are to be done in such a way that anybody can lead them with a prayer book and a Bible. So that if you have a prayer book and a Bible, you can pray morning prayer. And he makes it a requirement of all of the priests in England that they say morning prayer and evening prayer in their churches at the time when the people in their communities are going to work. So if you're in a farming community, you might say morning prayer very early and evening prayer whenever it was the sun was going down. But it was to be at a time when the people could easily get to them. And he also says these are in public, these are to be prayed in English. But if you speak another language and are playing them privately, you can pray in whatever language you want. So if you want to pray morning prayer in Latin, you can do that as long as you speak Latin. Okay. So this is the first time in a couple of thousand years that there are only 2, and they're called the daily office. Okay.
1500s.
Right. It first gets published in the prayer book of 1549. So, right at the scope.
Do they have special names for these two?
Like morning prayer and evening prayer.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Yeah. Nothing fancy.
Cranmer is a very simple person.
Yes.
Morning prayer and evening prayer.
And that's the very first thing in the prayer book.
That's the very first thing in the prayer book. As a matter of fact, if you pick up our prayer book today and you open it up, the first thing you come to, well, it's not quite the first thing because there's the calendar of saints and a few other things. Yeah, yeah. But the first thing you get to really is the daily office. Now, I mentioned over time things accrete. In 1979, when the Episcopal Church is writing the prayer book, they're like, well, morning prayer and evening prayer are good, but we should add a couple of other things. So they add in a service of noonday prayer. So there's a noonday prayer service. And also, by 1979, the day doesn't end at sundown, right? I mean, none of our days end when the sun goes down. We go to bed at 5 o'clock. We have electric light now, right? And so they went back and picked up the office of Compline, which is the night prayer, with the idea that you don't go to bed at 5 o'clock. So you might say evening prayer right at the end of your work day. And then say Compline when you're actually going to bed. So those are 1979 recoveries, you might say. But there's also something in here that is also a 1979 edition. And it starts on page 136. If you're bored with the sermon today, you can check it out. That's called Daily Devotions for Individuals and Families. Because morning prayer is a kind of complicated and involved service. It involves, there's an optional confession at the beginning, and then you have to figure out what the hymn is, what the psalm is for the day, and what the readings are for the day, and I'll talk about the daily office lectionary in a minute. And they thought, well, not everybody's going to do that. So we should have simpler prayers that people can use. So daily devotions for individuals and families are exactly what that sounds like. There's one page that says, in the morning. So there's a psalm, the same psalm every day. There's a reading, the same reading every day. You can sing a hymn if you want to, you don't have to. You offer prayer for yourself and others as you want. You say the Lord's Prayer and a closing comment. That's the daily prayer in the morning. They have a similar service at noon. A psalm, a reading, place for prayers, the Lord's Prayer, and a comment. In the early evening, and at the close of day. So 4 times a day, fixed hour prayer. If you want this to take home, on the youth bulletin boards, there's a booklet that says Praying as a Family. It's just this. Because we don't copyright the Book of Common Prayer. prayer so I could steal it right from there and put it in there with appropriate, you know. So that's also a 1979 addition to our prayer book with the idea that you might or might not say morning prayer or evening prayer. Most people don't go to church to say those anymore. We don't say them in public here.
When the lady was preaching at St. John's in Erie,
yes.
We used morning prayer. The priest came, he used it earlier. So.
Right. This is what happened with morning prayer, is, this ties in with worship. When the prayer book comes over to England, from England to the United States, with what are then the British colonies, there are not a lot of clergy people here. There are no bishops in the colonies. So if you want to be a priest, you have to go over to England to get ordained. A lot of people who go over to England to get ordained don't come back. Either they die on the way there or the way back, because it's not an easy sea voyage. Or they get over to London and discover that living in London, or in England even, is actually kind of nice. And living in the wilds of Virginia is an awful lot of work. And I'm a priest, I'm a minister, I can get a job here in England. I don't have to, you know, go back to those wild colonies. So there are not all that many clergy in the New World. But there are a lot of people who are Anglicans who want to worship. Well, one of the things about morning and evening prayer is that they can be led by anybody. You don't have to be a priest to lead morning prayer. Anybody can do that. These days, bishops like to license people who lead them in public, but you don't have to be to lead it. Anybody can lead it. If you can read, you can lead the service. So it becomes the custom in the colonies that, well, we don't have a minister, so we'll gather together and say morning prayer, and we'll appoint some of the leading men, and it is all men. The idea of a woman leading worship, only the Quakers did at that time, whoever the leading man was who got tipped would lead morning prayer. And when a priest happened by, they'd have Eucharist.
See, I never did that.
Yeah. So it became the custom here that we didn't have communion very often. And that custom continued even when there were more clergy. So even after the revolution and we get bishops in the New World, and we now have more clergy in the New World, so even when your parish had its own minister, you still might only have communion once a month or once a quarter, and you would do morning prayer the rest of the time because that's what people were used to and that was the custom. And then we built theology around it that, well, we don't do communion very often because we don't want to receive communion unworthily. We don't want it to become a regular thing. And it's not until the revisions that lead to the 1979 prayer book that we recover Cranmer's idea that Eucharist is the principal worship for Sunday morning and that everybody should receive communion every week. I remember that change. That was a big change. A lot of you remember that change, too. When I grew up, we did morning prayer 3 Sundays a month and communion the 4th Sunday. My first church as a priest, when I got there, they were still doing communion only once a month. By the time I left, they were doing communion every week. But they were still, when I got there, morning prayer was the standard.
I remember as a little kid, the Eucharist is a longer service.
It is. Well, it depends on how long the sermon is.
Yes. When you're 8 yes. years old, oh, I've got a meal.
Oh, my God. But morning prayer was never intended to be principal Sunday worship. It was intended, you were supposed to say morning prayer on Sunday morning. But Sunday morning, you said that by yourself. And then you were supposed to come to church and have Eucharist and then do evening prayer at home.
It's a nice service. It's a shame we don't use it in congregate every once in a while. We, when Judy retired, Judy Burroughs, and we were without a priest, we had a priest come for Sunday. And during that Lent, Tom Tripp, who was a deacon, and we set up 8 a.m. Morning prayer service on Wednesday during Lent. And it was really nice. And a couple times, I guess once, the weather was bad, Tom didn't make it, and we just did it ourselves, a few of me. But it was, it's kind of a shame it's gone by the wayside.
It's, it is a nice service, and, you know, we've, it is one of those things that we don't do in public anymore because we no longer have a time that I could pick that was when this parish is headed to the fields, right? When would that be? Exactly. You know, the people start heading down to
33,
down to the 33, beginning at about 7:30 in the morning.
Exactly.
So I could do it at 7 in the morning, but then not everybody's, you know, going at 7:30. And the same thing with coming home. When would you do? It's not like everybody puts down their tools as it starts to get dark and heads home. So we don't follow that pattern anymore. So it's become more and more a private service. I'd say, I try to do morning and evening prayer every day. I don't always succeed, but I usually hit at least one.
It seems also like families are so busy these days, you know, with children and after school events and work and, you know, fitting something like that in is...
So that's why I think the shorter daily devotions work better for families because you may not be having breakfast together, but everybody's having breakfast. And you can, you know, a two-minute service you can fit in. You may not be gathering around the dinner table, but everybody's having dinner. But the one that families seem to use a lot is the at close of day when they put the kids to bed. Because that's a good thing. But if you want to say morning prayer on your own, in the very back of the prayer book, where it says, this is page 934, there is a lectionary for the daily office. And it is a two-year lectionary, so that over the course of 2 years, you'll read most of the Bible. There's a few places you won't read. It's a little complicated until you figure it out, but there's all of these paragraphs that tell you how to figure out which year it is, but it all boils down to, gotta find it here. The first Sunday of Advent before, so remember Advent starts in December. So the first Sunday of Advent before even numbered years. So basically the first Sunday of Advent in an odd numbered year. So this first Sunday of Advent. You start daily office year one. And then if it's the first Sunday of Advent that falls in a, is in, so it's year one, we would start this year because it's the first Sunday of Advent before an even numbered year. The first Sunday of Advent before an odd numbered year, you start year two. And the church year starts in Advent. There are, you see here it says Sunday. The week starts with Sunday. The first line, there's a set of psalms. In this case, 146 and 147. Those are the psalms for morning prayer that day. There are a set of psalms after the little symbol. Those are the psalms for evening prayer. In this case, 111, 112, 113. And then there are three readings. One from the Old Testament, one from the epistles, and one from the gospel. You can pick which readings you're doing on which at which service. Generally, people do two readings at morning prayer and one reading at evening prayer. Usually, you'll do the Old Testament reading at morning prayer and then either the epistle or the gospel and then do the other at evening prayer. The way when I do it, during year one, I do the gospel in the evening, and the Old Testament and the Epistle in the morning. And during the year two, I do the Epistle in the evening, and the Old Testament and the Gospel
in the morning. I thought the lectionary for the church was a 3-year.
It is for Sunday.
Oh, okay.
This is for the daily office, which has readings for every day. Okay. Now, remember I said Cranmer wanted this to be simple? If that's not complicated enough for you, and if you just follow this lectionary, it basically reads in order. So you start with Isaiah, and then you read the next bit of Isaiah, and then you read the next bit of Isaiah, and then you read, you start with 2 Peter. You end up with, the Sunday readings are sometimes a little different. But 1 Thessalonians, you're going to read all of 1 Thessalonians, and then you're going to read into 2 Thessalonians. But if you flip to the back of the Daily Office Lectionary, you can if you want to, because heaven knows it's not complicated enough, right? If only that were so. Yeah. There are daily office readings for the holy days. So, St. Andrew on November 30th, there's a psalm and a reading for morning prayer, a psalm and some readings for evening prayer. For St. Thomas, so if you can go through the holy days, if you want to acknowledge the saints, you can do that. You don't have to, but you can. It's supposed to be simple, right? Well, you know. This is different from the Sunday lectionary, which is a 3-year cycle and only has readings for Sundays and holy days. Okay. The Daily Office lectionary has readings for every day. Oh, it's hot.
I'm going to leave it.
Yes. So I'm going to talk about other religions' fixed hour prayers next week, and maybe some other things.
When they put the prayers together, was that the First Book of Common Prayer?
The First Book of Common Prayer was in 1549. It's the first time you have a prayer book in English, and it had morning prayer and evening prayer, and the Eucharist, and a service for baptism, and for marriage, and for...
And this was done in England?
In England, in 1549.
The Church of England.
Church of England, 1549, when the Church of England really finally separates from the Church of Rome.
Wasn't that the PBS series where... I could think of the name of it. Where they go through the history of this, where there's a protagonist, and Henry VIII...
I don't know. I mean, Henry VIII, obviously. Henry VIII makes Cranmer Archbishop so he can get his divorce. But this is during the reign of Edward VI. But this is
Edward
VI. Henry's son.
Okay.
Is when the prayer book comes out. Henry separates the Church of England from the Church of Rome. But it's in Edward VI. That the Church of England really becomes something different than the Roman Catholic Church. Okay?